This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey, everybody, it's Jessica, and today I want to do a solo episode explaining the biggest Supreme Court case of the term. And I'm talking about the decision as to whether or not a president or former president enjoys some or absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. We've been talking about this case for a long time. Now we have an answer. And so because the case just came out, I want to give you a brief explainer about what I think it means and what it doesn't mean, because I have seen some reporting that, frankly, I don't completely agree with. So what we have here is a 6-3 decision on most issues by the Supreme Court. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority for his conservative colleagues. At one moment, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, another one of his conservative colleagues, did not join the majority. I want to talk about where. And then all three liberals dissented. And so this is a case that came about as a result of former President Trump facing charges for his involvement in January 6th. And I'm purposely being fairly broad here, but this is the so-called DC election interference case. And what we have in this case are charges against the former president, in part based on obstructing an official proceeding. That official proceeding was Congress's certification of the Electoral College vote, and in part based on charges like depriving people of the right to have their vote properly counted. And part of what Donald Trump's defense has been is that I was the president at the time that the actions in the indictment took place, and therefore I am absolutely immune from criminal prosecution. Now, pause here. Why do we not have an answer to this? Because we've just never been here before. We've never had a former president who has allegedly engaged in these types of actions, and therefore we've never had a criminal case against a former president for, broadly speaking, trying to subvert the election. And so this is an open legal question, or at least it was until this week. And President Trump said, I'm absolutely immune. His argument for immunity was really, really big and bold. What he said is that there can't be any criminal cases against a current or former president unless that person is first impeached by the House and convicted by the Senate. That is an argument that the Supreme Court did not buy. They did not adopt his argument, but they did. Let's be clear. The headline is, give a decision that is a win for the former president. So this was a good day for former President Trump, not a great day for special counsel Jack Smith, who is the prosecutor bringing this case. So let's go into the details. So Trump says, I'm immune from criminal prosecution. And he says that in the trial court. The trial court says no, with a lot of details that I'm skipping over. He then brings an appeal to the DC Court of Appeals. The DC Court of Appeals says, you know what? There is no immunity from criminal prosecution for a former president. And the case then goes up to the Supreme Court. There was a lot of talk about the timing of when the court decided to take the case, when the decision came out. What I'm going to do is focus not on timing, but on what the court actually said. So what the court said is there is basically three buckets of activities, and the type of activity dictates the type of protection that a president or former president has. And I'm very purposely saying not dictates the type of protection that Donald Trump has, because this is a case about anybody who is president or anybody who is a former president. The Supreme Court is not writing this just about Donald Trump, although they get into the details of his indictment. They're writing this about the office of the presidency and what type of protection that is entitled to. So what the court does, the majority, again, written by the Chief Justice, is he lays out these three buckets of activities. So bucket number one are, quote, core presidential activities. These are the things that only a president can do. Senators can't do these things. Vice presidents can't do these things. So what does that mean exactly? That means things like appointing an ambassador. This, in our case, may be closer to the indictment here. That means something like telling the attorney general, you should open up an investigation about election fraud. And if you don't, I'll fire you, because nobody else has the power to hire and fire the attorney general other than the president. So for that bucket, bucket number one, there is absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. Now, let's move on to bucket number two. This is one concentric circle out from core presidential functions. So in this case, what we're talking about is official conduct, but conduct that other people other than the president could take. And what I mean by this is what we're really distinguishing here is private conduct by, for instance, citizen Donald Trump versus public official conduct by President Donald Trump. And in this case, we can think about a bucket of activities that involve, for instance, talking to your vice president and saying, I don't think you should certify the Electoral College count. And the court says, in part, this could be official conduct because the president is talking to the vice president about his official role and duties. And so, again, in this case, we're talking not about the president playing golf. That would be seen as a private activity, again, unless it's with a head of state and they discuss business. But we're talking about the president engaging in activities that are part of his job, even if they're on the outer bounds of his job. And for this bucket, bucket number two, what the court says is there's a presumption of immunity from criminal prosecution. Now, last bucket, as I'm sure you already guessed, is private conduct or unofficial conduct. And when it comes to that type of conduct, for our case, maybe that includes talking to private citizens or tweeting to private citizens and saying things like, we should stop the steal, or there was election fraud, that sounds like the type of activity a candidate would take, not a president. And in that case, we can see there is no immunity from criminal prosecution. So the court creates these three categories. And as you likely already guessed, the devil is really going to be in the details for the trial court judge overseeing this case, Judge Chutkan, of having to apply this new standard to the criminal complaint that's pending against former President Trump. Now, what about the dissents in this case? And specifically, I'm talking about the moment where this opinion became a 5-4 opinion, not a 6-3 opinion. And that's because Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who was appointed by President Trump at the end of his term, did not join the majority on one point. And that point was whether or not evidence of official conduct for which you do enjoy immunity from criminal prosecution, whether or not that could be used in order to try and prove a private act where you don't have immunity. And the majority said you cannot use evidence of official conduct in order to prove criminal liability for private conduct. Let's pause here and acknowledge that this is going to make it much more difficult, not just for Jack Smith, but for any other prosecutor who wants to bring a case against a president or a former president for proving that private conduct rises to the level of criminal liability. And that's in part because you would often need, one can imagine, the public conduct in order to show the private violation. What's an example here? Think about bribery, for instance. We could make the argument that if a president is bribed to appoint an ambassador, that appointing an ambassador would be seen as an official conduct, but that the bribe, accepting the bribe, asking for the bribe, could be seen as private conduct. The problem is it's hard to prove the bribe without proving the appointment. And that's my point here, which is that the majority has made it more difficult for prosecutors, if we do have more of these cases, to prove criminal liability when it comes to presidents and former presidents. Now, what about the dissent? So Justice Sonia Sotomayor has the lead dissent here. And what she is really worried about is the idea that the majority has basically bubble wrapped presidents and former presidents in this protective layer, has insulated them from criminal liability in all but very rare circumstances, and has undermined the idea that no person is above the law. The dissenters, the liberals in dissent, are also concerned about the idea that we're making the president a king, that we're subverting the criminal justice system by preventing accountability. And we can see in the dissent that there is just a completely different view of how this case should have come out. That is perhaps the biggest understatement of this episode. Now, I think one way to try and explain the difference between the majority and the dissent is to focus on what they're most worried about. So when it comes to Chief Justice John Roberts in the majority, and again, he is somebody who has worked in the executive branch, I think what he's most worried about is protecting presidents. And he's worried about creating a situation where presidents are worried about turning a corner because they think there might be a federal or state prosecutor who wants to file a politically motivated criminal case against that president, and that the ability for presidents to function will just be crippled. The dissent has a very different worry. The dissent is worried about being able to hold everybody, including presidents and former presidents, accountable for alleged criminal behavior. The dissent is worried about, again, subverting the idea that no person is above the law. And the dissent really focuses on this idea of protecting the public in the sense of ensuring that every person, particularly very powerful people who make a myriad of decisions about our country, are subject to accountability, are subject to the criminal justice system. Now, what happens next for former President Trump? This case goes back to the trial court judge. Again, that's Judge Tanya Chutkan. And she now has to apply the Supreme Court's new standard here. And Judge Chutkan is going to figure out which of the acts in the complaint are official acts, which are unofficial acts, and only those claims that are based on unofficial acts can move forward. Now, another big bottom line here is this case is not going to trial before the election. That was frankly true before the Supreme Court decision, and it is true now after the Supreme Court decision, even more so. It's going to take a while for Judge Chutkan to apply this new standard, and whoever doesn't like how she applies it can, of course, appeal that back up. Now, in terms of the timing, I'm going to say something that I know everybody listening already knows, which is that the timing really matters because of the election. And if former President Trump does win the election again, he has said, I believe fairly explicitly, that he would direct his attorney general to dismiss this case and the other federal case pending against him. And therefore, if a case does not go to trial before the election and he wins, it essentially means the case is not going to trial. So obviously, timing really does matter here. Now, that is the quick summary of the immunity decision. There were other big Supreme Court decisions, and I'm going to bring you a separate episode where we talk through the term in general and talk through themes about the Supreme Court term and what's happening in the Supreme Court more broadly. But I did want to quickly get you an episode explaining what I think is the biggest case of the term. It's the case that you're reading the most about, and I hope that was helpful. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe.